Welcome, everybody, to The Lonely TARDIS, your journey through space and time, Lords, where five companions come together to talk all things Doctor Who on an actual weekly basis. We did it, everybody. 13, 14, 15 shows in a row. I can't believe it. I am one of your lucky hosts, Dolly Domofsky, and I say I'm lucky because we get to talk to each other and you guys interact with us, and it's a blast. Also joining me, Steven Strum, who is muted.
Trying to fix my microphone.
That's good, Steven. How's it going? Sean Norton.
Hello.
One Marcus Beer.
Hello.
And the most requested person on Lonely TARDIS, possibly more than Peter Capaldi himself. Yes, we were able to regenerate her back into the show, Susan Arendt.
Hello, everybody. I'm very, very excited about being on the show today.
It's going to be an awesome show. We're so thankful to have you back, Susan. I think it may have actually been a year since you've been on.
I think it was, actually.
Yeah, and then obviously Doctor Who went on hiatus, so we went on hiatus, and we're all back, and it's a joy to have you on. We're going to talk essentially all about this season on this episode. There wasn't much news that broke. And, Steven, I think you're – there you go. Okay. Your microphone is exploding for a second there. So before we hop in, I do have something funny to mention. As I was putting my daughter to bed just now, I said, hey, honey, she's a wonderful little six-year-old girl who's just getting into Doctor Who all on her own. I'm not pushing
her,
really getting in it. And I said, I got to put you to, we got to put you to bed early, hon. I've got to record the podcast. And she goes, welcome, everybody, to the Lonely TARDIS podcast. Yes, honey, that's the one. So she has memorized the intro, and I think she stays up and listens to us talk from her bed. Her bedroom's actually right next door to my recording studio here, so that must be either keeping her awake happily or unfortunately.
Whovian by osmosis.
Yes, exactly. We're going to be – Stephen, you have to mute yourself when you're not talking because we're getting that echo. But, anyways, what a season. Last week we wrapped up Hellbent, and this week we just want to talk about the entire season as a whole, and – with Susan on the show, I'm sure, as you mentioned before, you have plenty of thoughts, and we want to hear everything that you have to say. So let's, without further ado, I think, folks, we can just dive right into it, and I'd love to hear what Susan has to say, just kind of in general, because this has been the most consistent season of Doctor Who, I think, at least episode to episode, the two episode arcs. The theme has been pretty strong with the whole hybrid thing, although how that played out in the end, I'm sure we'll get to. So, Susan, what were your thoughts about this entire season?
I loved it. I unabashedly thought it was outstanding, just episode to episode. Mm-hmm. And it's easily the best season we've had in years. And the thing that pisses me off, though, is... I've been wanting them to get rid of Clara forever because, oh, my God. But they finally turned her into a really interesting person and a really interesting companion. They made her a person. She's, she's an addict. She mm-hmm. has all the, she can hold her own while she's with him. So they pulled off the whole friend thing in a way that I think was not entirely successful with Donna. Mostly because Donna was not very likable as a character. And then they get rid of her. They're like, yay, we're going to make her into this really cool character, and there's the door. But yeah, no, overall, I thought it was an absolutely fantastic season. I think it makes a lot of sense for them to be doing a lot of two-parters, because, I mean, if you remember Classic Who, which was told episodically, every episode, or virtually every episode, was at least, when you put all the chapters together, was an hour and a half long. Mm-hmm. So it gave them room to breathe and room to tell stories. And so if you take the modern commercial format, because original Who didn't have commercials, it comes out to about that same length. So it just makes sense, and it gives them a little more room to tell their stories. So really, really worked for their benefit this season.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that that we've commented numerous times on this show is that two-episode arc seems to have, God forbid I say it this way, but seems to have helped Moffat, Stephen Moffat, in that we were able to get these stories that actually had room to breathe, and you could spread them out, and you weren't forcing plot points too quickly and you know, jamming too much stuff into it, as we saw with really I would say the only bad episode this season, which was Sleep No More.
Jesus, I can't.
Go ahead.
The core idea of that episode is really good.
Yes.
Like, what happens to you if you don't sleep for years? Fascinating idea. I love that. Sleep dust, the stuff that collects in the corner of your eye while you're sleeping. Are you kidding? Are you kidding? Are you kidding?
Eye boogers, as we call them here.
Oh, my God. And, like, even if they had come up with at least a half-decent explanation, I don't know how you would do this, but of how it became sentient, then I could have hand-waved it. I would have been like, all right, okay, that's stupid, but at least you kind of – maybe there was an accident or something, and that's how it became – no, they're just like, oh, it's kind of – look over there. Are stupid, so dumb. Oh.
It was you know, that – that episode, I think, it wasn't the most divisive episode on the internet, because I think everybody universally panned it. So there was at least every Whovian was basically in agreement. But to the rest of the team, do you guys feel that this two episode arc format worked this season? Because we haven't had anything like this since Classic Who.
I'll go first.
Sure.
I think the two episodes, there's nothing wrong with the two episode arcs. Obviously, in the tournament.
Oops. Hold on 1 second, Marcus. Yeah, we're starting to lose you. Steven, can you mute for just 1 second? Okay. Marcus, try again.
I try again. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. So, yeah, apologies. The weather over here is getting a bit iffy and things are blowing away, including my internet. So, yeah, I mean, back in the day, the old, Tom Baker, Peter Davison, all those guys, I mean, they were the 4 or 5 episodes. And on the whole, it worked because they were 20-minute episodes. The problem this season for me has been that there hasn't been a true two-parter because, as I've said on this show many times this season, there's been enough for 1.5 episodes. That, you know, they've stretched out a story over 2 episodes when there's only enough for 1. I mean, the introduction of a shielder, you know, that first episode could have been done in 10 minutes. And then we move to the highwayman version, the highway lady version of a shielder. So I don't know if it's a, you know, if it's a writing issue, if it's a time constraints issue. We know that Moffat and Gatiss in particular, you know, those two can do feature length episodes of a show and do them phenomenally well in Sherlock. Every episode of Sherlock has been, you know, 1.5 hours, 2 hours long, really good, strong story.
No. I will agree that it had the appropriate amount of content for the time, but half the episodes suck.
I disagree. I mean, I maybe it's because I like the chemistry between the two leads in Sherlock, and you know that chemistry that's sort of like between the two leads in Doctor Who has just wavered all over the place in the last 3 weeks in particular. I mean, perhaps Cumberbatch and the other one, the little one.
Martin Freeman.
That's it. Dildo Baggins.
yeah, that sounds right.
Perhaps it's their chemistry that pulls it through for me, but I actually have actually enjoyed, I mean, you know, and perhaps again, it could be, you know, one of those things that I get the Brit blindness because I see all these places I used to go and hang out and drink with and, you know, but I still think that the episodes of Sherlock have been, on the whole, you know, there's only been 6 or 8 episodes of Sherlock, or 9 or whatever it is, but they've been better than most of the Moffat episodes of Doctor Who.
Agreed.
over the last couple of years.
Completely agree.
So, I just think that if you want to go, you know, there's nothing wrong with having a season-long arc and a big bad. There's nothing wrong with having a couple of two-parters in there, but make sure the two-parters are worth the name. Otherwise, you know, just do an episode less. because the filler is, you know, I mean, I'm an avid Doctor Who fan and a voracious Doctor Who fan, but the filler just doesn't work for me.
There was only one filler episode, and that was that Sleep No More episode. Everything else was in either a two-part or a three-part.
No, when I say filler, I'm talking about where they've taken a two-parter and stretched
it. Oh, sure.
Yeah, like in Under the Lake and Before the Flood, there's a lot of just faffing about in there. Mm-hmm. It's an hour and a half long.
That
story.
Yeah, the first episode, I think Under the Lake it was definitely that way. It was kind of far ahead, stretched a little bit too thin. But I really enjoyed Before the Flood. I actually thought that was one of my favorite episodes. It was actually my favorite two-parter as a whole of the season because of the kind of the ideas that it presented and the conclusion and how just absolutely witty the Doctor was. But I agree with the both of you. There can be far too much throwing in fluff just to kind of spread the length of an episode, further along.
Yeah, to pad it out a little bit. I actually didn't wind up feeling it too much thinking back on it now until I think the second part of the first Isildur story. And then I felt like that was where I start coming into agreement with you guys. Also, I was way wrong. It felt like she was in like six episodes this season, but then I went and looked back and it was only like,
yeah, didn't it?
But I don't know. I thought she showed up a lot more, but
she was in four episodes. Don't forget.
Four episodes.
Yeah. Don't forget Face the Raven.
It felt like more than that. Like thinking back on the season and stuff, it felt like she was around a lot more.
They really stretched that contract with Maisie Williams, didn't they?
Yeah, they got their money's worth for better or worse.
But she's a great character. I mean, they made her into a really interesting character.
She's a great character potentially. I mean, I don't think that she got fleshed out. I know we were dropping in and out of her timelines a lot, but she was almost like, you know, the magical cat that turns up in a JRPG. Will basically impart some advice for the entire level. You know, it's I would love to. I mean, we're not going to get a spin-off with me in it, you know, or Shielder.
I bet we do.
I don't know. I think Game of Thrones plays a lot more than Doctor Who, I'm guessing.
Yeah, well, yes, but Game of Thrones doesn't require her to be there all the time, and they don't shoot all year.
Well, I mean, obviously, yeah, Doctor Who doesn't shoot all year either. I mean, you know, you're right there. But I just don't, again, I would like to have seen a little more of her journey as opposed to the haphazard way that she was slapped in. You know, she almost became, like I said, a plot device as opposed to a character.
Oh. Really? So you didn't like that? See, one of the things I liked is that we see the Doctor doing what the Doctor does, which is he breezes into somebody's life, he does something major, and then he leaves. And then we drop in with her much, much later, and we see the effect that that's had on her with, you know, all of the children that she lost and how she's vowed never to have children again. Face the Raven sucks. That, to me...
Thank you.
That was just like, oh, hey, we got to kill Clara somehow. So, like, I don't – Shielded didn't even need to be in there. Mm-hmm. But then I very much enjoyed her in Hellbent. I like how her personality is developing and how she's one of the few people that encounters the Doctor who isn't like, oh, Doctor, you're so amazing. You know, she's not his enemy, but she's not his friend either.
What's really interesting about her character is that, you know, we have the River Song paradox where we don't even know what part of her timeline we're in anymore whenever the Doctor bumps into her. And I have a feeling it'll be the same thing at Christmas next week. We have no idea which River Song we're seeing. And it has to be, you know, much more clearly explained. With Isildur, it kind of doesn't matter when you bump into her because she really only has this kind of a short memory span, right? Even though she's this eternal person, she can remember who the Doctor is, and then it really doesn't matter at what point in her life she's at. You know, I think it could lead to some really interesting one-off stories with her. I really do hope they bring her back next season. It could lead to some really interesting one-off stories with her in that it doesn't matter what point in the timeline. She doesn't know she's going to die. She doesn't care. She might know, but, you know, it would be a cool avenue to go down, I think.
I think it would have been better if the eye booger episode had not been filmed, written at all. And it could have been an Ashilda-centric episode. It could have been one of those ones where we have them every now and again when the Doctor is not involved. It's an episode of Who without him. So, you know, maybe it could have been her, you know, following on from that picture of Clara where she's in the background. Maybe it could have been an episode of her just stalking Clara. And, I mean, she's just become, you know, she's all, you know, I mean, all of a sudden in our sort of like experience of being, you know, a 10 episode arc or whatever it was, she's become this wise, benign, you know, she's, it's only touched, you know, touched points, little touches on her going a little bit nuts where she was the, you know, wanting to bring the pig monsters or the turkey monsters or whatever they were in from another planet when she was the highway woman to all of a sudden being this benign character who, you know, is trying to protect all refugees in this amazing sort of like Diagon Alley knockoff to this even more benign and observant creatures, you know, at the end of the universe. And it just, it would have been nice to have that little bit of meat, one episode maybe, that just, you know, some, a couple of flashbacks of, you know, some things she's interacted with, and then just an episode of almost like a couple of days in the life, maybe, you know, touching in with Clara or following her or watching the Doctor from afar, almost like the Turn Left episode with Donna Noble that I actually really, really liked, except for the whole, you know, 5 minutes at the end with the, you know, the TARDIS and alternate dimensions malarkey. But I love the idea of, you know, somebody who's been touched by the Doctor having their life, having their day while the Doctor's not there. And I think that's an opportunity missed, and it would have been, it would have given the final few minutes of Hellbent in particular, I think, a lot more weight, in my opinion.
No, I agree. And looking back on it and rewatching some of the stuff near the end, it's like a very Moffat way of taking a character and then making her one of the most important things in all the mythos, but condensed down into four episodes of one season, right? So I think she could have, it would have been better served to do that as well and to look more into that instead of her just popping up as this more knowledgeable person, you know, each time. And then, of course, basically an immortal equivalent of the Doctor at the very end. So what do you think, Steve?
About which thing in particular? Sorry, I mean.
Well, right now we're just talking about Shielder, but in general, the season.
Well, yeah, I know what we're doing on the season wrap up episode, but yeah, I don't know. What's that?
Nothing going.
yeah. I don't know. Shielder. I've talked about my opinions on a Shielder in the previous episodes and stuff like that, talking about how I don't really care for guest characters in one way or the other. But with Shielder in particular, like kind of the weirdness to me, it was more that, like Marcus said, and we've talked about this before, but like the having every episode feel like a, you know, 1.5 and everything like that. And you kind of see it in the structure of the episodes too. It's very like most of the 2-part episodes feel completely different. You go back to like season 3 of Doctor Who and you have the 3-part finale with the Master. And that's what I was constantly reminded of throughout the season, where one episode felt completely different from the next episode, felt completely from the next different from the next episode. There was a common threat usually, but it didn't feel necessarily like I was getting parts of a story that was long and needed time to be told. It felt more like I was getting plots that weren't necessarily good enough to warrant their own episodes getting made into episodes that were connected to each other so that they had more meat on them. And yeah, I think you've really, really felt that with the Maisie Williams episodes. Like, I don't think either of her first two, you know, introduction episodes were that strong on their own and would have felt like, well, these aren't quite good enough for a season of Doctor Who. These aren't quite good enough for us to put up there by themselves. But we have this guest character. We have, you know, this actor that everybody knows. We have this heat coming off of this. And we have this concept that we have right now of like the 2-parter season and everything like that. And so it brought everything together that way. And I think the fact, like, her character suffers from that pretty severely.
Yeah, I mean, I can totally see that, I guess. But it this season, I think especially, was interesting, and I'd like to touch on a couple more things here, in that Moffat and crew really left a lot of the characters open-ended, right? So now you have a Shielder and Clara aren't you know, neither of them are dead. They were at the end of the universe, and now they're just zipping around in their own TARDIS. That could be its own spin-off show right there, right? You have Missy's whereabouts unknown now that she is basically taking control of the Daleks. You have Osgood, Petronella, or whatever version of Osgood you want to talk to, her and the Zygons, and that whole sit in unit. So there's that whole section is totally open-ended as well. So there's a lot of potential future plot points that are left out there, and I don't want to say dangling because they were all essentially closed, but there's plenty of meat on this season's bone to pick at over the next season or so, I think. I mean, do you guys kind of agree?
But isn't the problem, as always, when we're talking about Stephen Moffat, is that we won't get these things again. He's a master of building it up, introducing, and forgetting forever.
There's at that point, definitely, and I think last year was the epitome of that, in that we had a lot of really interesting characters, but they only appeared once, and that was it. They were gone. But I think this season played off better because I almost appreciate the open-endedness of some of these because, their story's done. Clara's story's done. Osgood's story is done. Unit's story is kind of done. But the Zygon story is done. But I think there was enough closure that anything else now is a bonus. At least that's the way I'm kind of approaching it. Whereas last season, we had that the police or that collector on, it was dinosaurs on a spaceship on that episode. I think there were a lot of episodes that really let Moffat and team drop the ball to on character development. But I think this season the characters and the creations were developed fairly well. I think that was a big criticism from last year. Speaking of Missy. She was in the first two episodes of this season, and then we saw her kind of with the Daleks and starting to plot and plan. Are we all in agreement that she'll probably be back over the next season with whatever crazy plan she has?
Of course she'll be back. Yeah. Of course she'll be back. Michelle Gomez is too good to not bring her back. I mean, she chews scenery better than anybody, mm-hmm. and her relationship with Capaldi's version of the Doctor is wonderfully unique, mm-hmm. because they're both older. So there's definitely a bond. There's always been a bond between the new version in New Who anyway. In Classic Who, it was very much bad guy, good guy. But in New Who, it's very much, we're the last two of our kind, and you're my enemy. But it was more of a frenemy situation, because if one of them goes away, then they're truly alone, and they didn't want to face that.
It's almost Batman Joker-ish.
It is very Batman Joker-ish, right? Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, and they've developed this really wonderful bond where they enjoy the fighting. Mm-hmm. They kind of sort of want to stop each other, but it almost feels like that's just going through the motions. It's just the fighting allows them to stay connected without pretending that they're friends, right?
Sure.
So, yeah.
You know what would be awesome this next season is with Gallifrey back, admittedly at the very end of the universe or wherever it is, that this that relationship that you just described, which is the perfect description right now, if that should change now, because they're not the last ones anymore. The Gallifrey is there, and it would be interesting to see maybe, Missy starting to screw with Gallifrey to try and make them, to make him go away again, because she never liked them.
Right.
The Master was used and abused by the Time Lords, and used them for his own ends in also the different ways, and Missy hasn't got to do that particular batch of screwing around yet, and that would be nice to see more Gallifrey, more Missy, but judiciously used, and not just what we got this week. Do we do Return of the Eye Buggers or do we go to Gallifrey?
Yeah, don't River Song Missy. Right?
Yeah,
like River was great when she was mysterious, and then they just started slapping her into everything and it ruined her. So don't do that to Missy.
So yeah. Remember at the tail, or I should say at the at some point last season when rumors started to peak about Missy being the master, there was a backlash, right? There was a, and I know Marcus, you brought this up on a couple of occasions, that it was so unknown in the direction they were going to take her, because she was so flirt, you know, in a weird way flirtatious toward the doctor because of this love-hate relationship, and that we didn't know what was going to happen to her Michelle Gomez's rendition of the Master, of Missy. And I think somewhere between the end of last season and the maybe the second episode of this season, that all seems to have changed, and now everybody seems to, me included, with open arms accept Missy as the master character, as this being that the doctor hates but does not want to see depart. Is that, I mean, I don't think it's false in saying that. It's the coin has sort of flipped.
I think that's, I mean, look, I put my hands up. I mean, I was not happy because I wanted them to, you know, I mean, like I said, I'm an old codger. I'm the enemy. Old middle-aged white guy. and I can't help it. I mean,
and English, that's for sure. Oh, I mean, sorry, Welsh. Did I say English? Wow. Woo.
I'm out of here. I think that my problem with Missy at the end of last season was that she was tied into the lamest of lame finales, where it was, you know, I mean, the way everybody became a Cyberman, all the dead people, including the Brigadier, and we had that cheesy little salute at the end, and, you know, where he flew off and saved his daughter, and I think that was one of the reasons that I thought, oh my God, if this is going to be every Master story, count me out. But Michelle Gomez, right from the get-go this season, I think the right thing this season, like I said, while it's been patchy and while it's been overstretched, you know, with regards to the two-part, the right thing on the whole has been a lot better for me than last season. And Michelle Gomez came out all guns blazing. And as Susan said, she chews scenery like few other people. I'm watching her and Capaldi chewing away. Clara caught in the middle of times was bliss. I mean, she really did. She channeled past Masters without going the John Sim route of, you know, ham and cheese. But she made the role her own. And I think, you know, the writing was better, but her performance, I mean, I have no problem with her performance last season either. I mean, you know, she was doing the best she could with, like I said, in my opinion, bad writing, bad story. But this time around, I mean, she's owned it, and I've got no problems with her as the mistress. And, you know, I would still like to see more Time Lord characters come back now that this time lock has been busted open, because we've seen enough Daleks come out of the Time War. So, yeah, I hold my hands up, and she's owning the role. Absolutely, 100%. I am a fan. Thumbs up.
Okay, I know early on we had some talk about the doctor's last will and testament and how all that played in. And Stephen, I remember something you had said in one of those first couple podcasts of the season where we were talking about Missy and that will and testament, and how she had this kind of strange, I don't want to say premonition, but she was drawn to the die, and she almost wanted this thing for herself. And I can't quite remember the exact words you said, but you really alluded to this whole Gallifrey link. And I think that how it all played out was really interesting with the last one. I kind of want to get your opinion on all of that, with that will and testament, potentially Missy's goal in Gallifrey and going on from there.
Are you sure that was me? I'm trying to remember what you're talking about. I'm not. Maybe.
Well, what are your thoughts on that whole concept, at least?
With the confession dial.
The confession dial. Yes. Thank you. That's what it was called. Yeah. Confession dial.
I mean, the concept of the confession dial I thought was perfectly fine and, you know, interesting and stuff like that. I liked the idea, you know, that whole episode. I think we all talked about, we really liked that episode, and as a part of the season, I think it was great and everything. But Yeah, I don't know. I can't remember exactly sure. what you're alluding to.
Well, you know, I will say this, now that we do have Gallifrey back, right, and I think it was a good conversation just a moment ago about what are we going to do with Missy and Gallifrey, and now that there's all these Time Lords available, you know, they're not the only two Time Lords left. I mean, how do you feel that Missy could fit in this whole new existence of Gallifrey? What would you kind of think of her plans going forward?
Well, I was going to say, when you guys were talking a minute ago, like, yeah, Missy and the Doctor and everything like that and the whole Master, you know, the last two Time Lords thing has been great and it's been fun. But like Susan said, it's going to lose its power if you keep trotting it out over and over and over again. And they showed a decent amount of restraint. Like, the Master goes away with the end of David Tennant, and we don't get him back again throughout, like, the entirety of Matt Smith's run, and not until the Danny Pink stuff last season. But they should nuke that relationship from orbit immediately while it's still... feels good in our minds, like, while we still like that and while we still enjoy that, because that should, like, that, yeah, like Marcus said, that should go away now that the relationship dynamic has changed. Gallifrey is back. Part of what makes Missy interesting, and it was actually one of the things that bothered me the most about this season, or especially early on, which, you know, I've talked about too, is that to the Master, like, humans are like playthings, like they're toys mm-hmm. and stuff like that he gets to like break, and because he gets to break them, and or she gets to break them, or, you know, whichever form the Master or Missy is in at the time, it pisses off the Doctor, and like they get to go back and forth on, you know, this weird sort of like bullying of each other and stuff like that. But now there's different, you know, not necessarily toys, because they're still, for as diminished as I think they are in, you know, as of this season and everything like that, they're still, you know, Time Lords, they're still Gallifreyans and everything, so they still have like they're on another level within the fiction and everything like that. But there need, you know, like Missy's motivation should like expand beyond just that now that like she doesn't have to just keep herself occupied. Now we can see maybe like more of like the kind of the classic, like trying to take over the universe, trying to become immortal, all this crazy stuff, some more, you know, more of that sort of thing that goes beyond just seeing the scope of the Doctor. Like the doctor needs to be the most important character on the show, obviously, and always will be, but the Doctor doesn't need to necessarily be the most important figure in the universe at all the time, not to every single character that exists. And now that the Time Lords are back in one way or another, he doesn't necessarily need to be either. So I would definitely like to see that, and that has like the twin resolutions of like we get to see a different kind of relationship between the Doctor and Missy. We get to see, you know, something that goes beyond just seeing Earth get fucked with all the time and like the Doctor get fucked with all the time, and we get to keep that relationship and keep those good years and those good stories from getting tired and worn out. And it also like gets away from the weird issue of we have the Doctor just letting Missy get away with whatever the fuck she wants, which like includes like genocide and murdering people in cold blood and stuff like that. But, you know, the Doctor is fine with that as long as it's Missy doing it, because they're the last time, you know, she's the last other Time Lord, he's got nobody else. So it's, you know, if she's just going to sit in a park and just vaporize people and then mock it and everything like that, the Doctor's like, silly old Missy, always, you know, getting up to these murder hijinks and everything like that.
I'm gonna have to disagree with you on that last point, because one of the things I really enjoy about his dynamic with Missy is that especially in this season, but throughout the arc of New Who, there's been this underlying fact that the Doctor is not a good man. Yeah, he wants to be a good man, he wants to help people, but he's kind of fucked up, and he does damage everywhere he goes. He breaks up families, he gets people killed, you know, his companions, pretty much every companion he's had has acknowledged that their lives are better without him than with him. And so the idea that he would let Missy do these horrible things because she's too important to him to let go, I think is another facet of that dark side of his character.
I actually totally agree with that. It was something that, again, like if we go back earlier in the season and stuff like that, we talked about this a little bit with, you know, the constant back and forth of, am I a good man? And like, somebody just needs to, like, and a part of the reason that that whole question got a little bit cloying to me all the time was because, like, nobody was just looking the doctor in the face and saying, like, fuck no you aren't. Or, like,
no one points out the collateral damage. I think that was a recurring conversation point for you this year, Steve.
Yeah, absolutely. And we got a little bit more into that this season, and, like, it was, some side characters in the Toby Whitehouse episode, mentioned it and stuff like that, like, oh, you don't give a shit about saving people unless it's somebody who matters to you. That was good, but it needed to be, like, Clara. Like, that was what I kept waiting for from Clara this whole season, was just, like, no, you're not a good guy. Like, look at this horrible shit you did. Like, she's literally, like, enabling him. She's got these, like, as much as I love the, like, note cards thing, like, the I'm very sorry for your lost cards or whatever, as much as I love that as, like, a goof, like, she's literally standing there and, like, enabling him to be this, like, horrible, awful person, and just, like, helping him along with it. And I needed a companion, or, maybe Clara's just not the kind of companion to say that sort of thing to the doctor. And maybe somebody else will next season or something like that. But it just seems so bizarre to me that they kept stringing that along, and it's just like, obviously, no. No, you're not.
You've got the Dalek telling him, you're a good Dalek. That was, that was last season, admittedly. But Clara's definitely not the companion to do that, because if she tells him, like, no, you're not a good person, then she risks losing her dealer. Of course she's going to enable him. Yeah.
That was a great point you mentioned earlier, but Clara being an addict to adventure, an addict to, travel and
danger.
The doctor being her pusher. It's a great point.
Yeah, and that's something I really wished had been developed more, because I thought it was really, really interesting, and that was one of the things that made her interesting, that unlike the other companions who are like, dude, you're wrecking my life, I'm going to go, you just, whatever, she is actively saying, yeah, you're wrecking my life, but it's great, I love it, no, I'm fine, no, it's great, I can quit whenever I want.
I 100% agree with you that that was exactly what they were going for, but I also agree in that, like, I really wished they had developed that further and gone more with that. Like, it felt, to me, it felt super out of left field for this, the beginning of the season, because they just hit it right away in the very first episode without any build-up to it whatsoever in the previous season, I didn't feel like, anyway.
No. When she starts lying to her boyfriend about where she's been?
Yeah, I suppose so, but, like, that, I mean, we've had companions lying about what they've been doing, because, like, there are a million reasons that you might lie about flying through time and space with, like, a man inside of a box. Like, Rose lied about that.
Just try to explain that to your family at Thanksgiving.
Exactly. Like, it's just easier that way. But I totally agree that that's definitely, like, a reason, but I needed them to, at some point, say, this is the reason. This is why we did this.
So I think the finale of this season kind of she kind of Heisenberged the whole thing, to quote Breaking Bad. She
no spoilers. I haven't finished.
She stopped buying crystal meth or time travel from the doctor and started time traveling on her own, which I thought was, now that you did this whole idea of addiction and her being this person that was willing to put aside her essentially her friends and family and
what did she have left? I mean, I was thinking about this towards the end too. You have back in the day Donna and her family, and you had Martha and her family, which was put in direct danger by the doctor. What did Clara have left? Like, I don't even know if
future Danny Pink's relative, right?
What happened to that weird foster family that she had?
Yeah,
episode one time. I don't even know, like, what grounded her to that anyway. So it's interesting to think. I feel like it was more of a story of she was losing herself than he was, like, after Danny Pink, like, they never really did a good job of really kind of putting her in this world where she had anything to lose. She had family or anything like that, and she went from the impossible girl to whatever she was. And then she became a nanny, and then she became a teacher and whatever. But I don't know. I feel like the significance of the arc was more about her losing herself, which was why I thought the out of nowhere ending of Face the Raven was so good until it was all undermined by the end of Hellbent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that pissed me off. But I mean, okay, it did.
Yes, let's get into it.
Yes, okay. Give into the hate. Let it flow through
you.
Dark side.
Just wrong, Sean.
I really enjoyed that. Clara trying to basically make decisions the way the Doctor does, which she has been building up to the entire season.
Yep.
Like, she is trying to be his equal. And by doing so, that got her killed. But then she takes ownership of that, and she's like, you know what? I did it. I'm just going to own it. And that's, I mean, that's how it is, and it's cool. And then him being so selfish that he can't just let it go is what leads to her, this ridiculous she's between heartbeats thing.
Yes.
I mean, I love the idea of it coming from this selfishness of his. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
But it just seemed like a cheap way to kill her, but not kill her.
So this is something that just popped into my head right now that I didn't really think of in our season finale episode, but I almost like that it feels cheap. Like, just for some context here, I actually like the season finale. You know, I have problems with it, to be sure, but like, I actually, you know, me and Deli kind of came down more on the positive end of it than Sean and Marcus did.
Yeah, there was a great divide last week. Very, like, a great divide.
It was an awesome divide.
I'll be the tiebreaker. That episode sucks.
Okay. We have another guest host from this year too, so let's to bring them on and like, I almost now that it, like thinking back on it, now that you pointed out like that it felt cheap and everything, I almost like that it felt cheap because he is actually cheating. Like he is actually he is intentionally breaking the rules, and like even the Time Lords are like disappointed with that. They're like, no, that's not how it works. What are you doing? Like, no, you don't get to do that. And like even she at a certain point is like, wait, are you? You didn't tell him. You didn't like give me full disclosure on this. This isn't how this is supposed to work. But then at the end, she's overcome by the addiction thing again, and like she's like, okay, well, like she literally says like, all right, well, we'll go back to Gallifrey and get it all set up. And then that stinger comes in and was like, well, but what if we go do a bunch of other stuff first? Because, like, she wants to do more of that crazy, dumb, dangerous stuff.
I'm totally going to rehab eventually, but let's all go do a bunch of blow.
Yeah, it's like, this will be my last...
Vegas.
Yeah. Like, I'm just going to... Okay, I'm totally done smoking right after I finish this pack. You know, like, that's exactly what it feels like. And the Doctor allows that to happen. Like, she finally... I mean, in a way, she kind of finally kicked the habit. And he put her in the exact perfect position to... Again, she's been enabling him to be a bad person. And he enabled her to have her addiction back and forth. They're, like, codependent on one another. See, that episode was great. You guys are all...
No, the one thing I do, like, I really enjoy the idea of Clara and Ishildur going off together because they're both different kinds of immortal. Mm-hmm. They both know things. Like, you know, Ishildur has many, many lifetimes worth of experience. Clara's been going around with the Doctor. They're both... So they're Time Lord-esque without knowing everything. So they've got this TARDIS that they kind of, sort of know how to operate. Not really. I mean, it's very much back to original Who, where the Doctor only kind of... I mean, the TARDIS was broken, and he could never guarantee where it was going to land. Like, this whole idea of him being able to pinpoint exactly when and where he's going to land is just freaky to me. Because, I mean, in original Who, it was always like, I don't know. Going somewhere.
Tom Baker actually has the the TARDIS randomizer
right,
thing.
Right, yeah. Right, exactly. So I feel like Clara and Ishildur are very much tapping into that older kind of motivation for the show, which is, I don't know, we're doing something and we're going to get in trouble. Let's go find out what's out there. Boom.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's kind of a different take on it and everything like that. But, you know, they have different means of doing it or whatever, because, like, you know, Clara, if she's going off there and getting into dangerous things without the Doctor now, like, she's literally has no way of knowing what she's going to be able to get into, because she's never been to the crystal fields of Blaga 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 or whatever. Like,
right.
My
favorite vacation spot, by the way, Blaga Blaga Blaga.
Well, I mean, it's really great this time of year. It gets really cold, you know, here in North Dakota, so it's just been on my mind lately. I'm sorry, in your town, USA, or whatever the hell you said, wherever you said I lived. So, you know, so that's kind of an interesting take on it. Like, I would almost like to see a companion that just, like, the Doctor, you know, we've dealt with that a little bit before, where the Doctor has just let companions, like, pick anywhere you want to go or whatever, and then they inevitably screw up, and or the TARDIS screws up, and it's like, we're going to, for as bad and as an episode as it was, like, the for some reason the first one that comes to mind is the Idiot's Lantern, where they're like, we're going to 1950s America to go see Elvis, and then they, like, appear in London, and it's, like, foggy out, and it's, like, you know, 40 degrees. And, you know, that's Clara. That's Clara and Ischilder every single time they do it. That's kind of interesting unto itself. Although I don't think we're ever going to see Clara again, so that's never going to go anywhere.
You don't think we'll see her again?
I think we'll see her again, but I don't think she's going to be a prime mover in a season or anything like that. I think she'll show up in a season finale or something like that. I mean, Jenny ran off.
Next Regeneration, right?
Yeah, sure. You know, there'll be some repercussions to this at some point. Maybe even a different actor playing her, you know, farther down the line or something like that. Like an older version of Clara or something like that. But I don't know.
So it's funny you say the word repercussions, Stephen, because that was my whole problem with this thing, as I went into great detail last week when Marcus and I were ranting against this plot development. There are no repercussions here. The Time Lords warn against it. It doesn't happen. The universe is going to crack in half. It doesn't happen. Clara gets to live as long as she wants. It doesn't happen. The Doctor shoots a dude basically in the face, jeopardizing all the characters and stuff. Whatever. Like, that's my problem with this whole thing. Like, a great season, I agree 100%, easily the best we've had in years. Most of the two-parters worked well. I disagree that there was a lot of filler, but there was definitely some. But then the ending, like, and for me, I didn't dislike Clara, but I felt like she had reached the point of her usefulness with the current writing team, right? I feel like they didn't really know what to do with her beyond that, so making her this sort of junkie for time travel and being the Doctor was a great way to show the consequences and everything like that.
I've said it was like three times now, but like she was fuel to feed the Doctor this season.
Right. And that's fine. Like once they changed their minds and didn't write her out of last year's Christmas episode, that's fine. But to do this thing where she's this in-between heartbeats echo who can do what she wants for however long she wants and, like, take away the consequence of death and like you guys were saying, like, trying to be the Doctor but not realizing that, you know, even the Doctor gets it wrong and can't run forever and all this other stuff, which was, I thought, actually really well built up considering Moffat is behind the wheel and everything. And then I think it just it puts a cloud over what would have otherwise been a pretty stellar season. I mean, here we are talking about Missy, and she hasn't shown up in 14 weeks. Like, that's good stuff. You know what I mean? And speculating about the role she played there and when she'll be back and all that other stuff. And same with Ischilder to a degree, although I think some of us disagree on overall use and general success of the character. Aside from Marcus's boogie monsters and eye thing, like, I feel like we're mostly on the same page about this stuff. But for me, a great season has this sort of unfortunate thing that it'll be remembered for now. And maybe it'll bother me less over time, but it still just drives me bonkers. And I genuinely hate that end development for Clara. I really do.
We spent a lot of time on Clara and Ischilder, and we talked a little bit about Gallifrey and Missy as well, but the main focus of this show is the Doctor, and we really only have a few minutes left here of this episode this week, but I'd like to get into a conversation about kind of the growth of the Doctor this season compared to last season and really where we kind of go from here with him as the lead. So I think last year Marcus and I were high in Capaldi from the standpoint that he's this great actor with a lot of noteworthy roles he's had in the past. He's been involved in the Whoniverse, and he brought this pedigree that hadn't been there yet for the lead. But he was kind of all over the place, right? He was still trying to discover who he was. Am I a good man? I mean, that was kind of the main focus of at least the first part of last season, and we got a sort of stale resolution at the end. But this year, he really settled down, and he became Rock Doctor, right? He became Baron Funkenstein at a couple points. I loved that. To me, Capaldi bringing more of his own personality, his own feel for who the Doctor should be, I think that was apparent this season, and it wasn't around last season. And you had, as much as people hated the sonic sunglasses, I think there was method to the madness at least in the end, we did get an actual sonic screwdriver. But you got this doctor who had this figure who had settled down in his character. He knew what he was going into every adventure, I guess, that he was going on, and still made it extremely compelling, maybe more compelling to me than I think any other Doctor's season, except for maybe, Tennant and Noble, because they had such a great chemistry there. And a lot of the things the Doctor was doing for the much of that season. So I know, Marcus, you and I were happy that with the Capaldi casting. I'd like to get your idea or your feel, your opinion for how it's panned out now this season as compared to last season.
Well, I think this season we're starting to see more of who is Capaldi, who Capaldi's Doctor is. Last season, again, was for me a total mishmash. He was all over the shop, and that wasn't down to his, I don't think, his acting. I think it was just the direction he was given. I mean, he was totally, he was a freaking psycho, and not in a good, fun way. I think this time round, we're looking at, certainly and not as easy, not easy to relate to as such, but we're getting a feel for who he is. And I'm actually down with that. I would like to see who Capaldi's doctor really is, because I don't think we've still really seen it 120% yet. I think it's something we will see mm-hmm. short. I think we're on the right track. Capaldi is a fantastic actor. We know we've got him for at least another season. It would be nice if he could put his stamp on, and he's backed up by great writing. I mean, he's definitely a step up on last season's, which was just... It was like a season full of regeneration sickness, which you can't take for more than an episode or two.
Yes, Susan, what about you? What were your thoughts about Capaldi this season compared to last?
Well, obviously, I mean, it was much better. He was given much better stories to work with. He had decided on a personality. I was really, annoyed that they made this decision to make the Doctor's regeneration an older man. Because after the tweeness of Matt Smith and David Tennant, it was really nice to have, okay, we're not doing young and cute anymore. We're going to do a guy who's seen some shit, right? Who's not going to be a romantic interest for Clara. He's going to be a guy in a box and very, Patrick Troughton, John Pertwee kind of thing. And then they stick it, that he comes out playing an electric guitar in a hoodie with Ray-Bans. And I was like, wow, really? So we're just going to try and hip this guy up, make him younger, I guess, like completely walk back the fact that we made this decision to make the Doctor older, to give him a different personality. But he made that work. So I think by changing the outside aesthetic, it allowed him to find this balance between crotchety old man and someone that you actually want to spend an hour with every week. I think it's very interesting that his costume changed when Clara left. He's not wearing a hoodie anymore. He's wearing, a silk jacket and a button-down shirt and a vest. He's closer to that original costume that he had. So clearly, her influence is being felt on him in certain ways. Mm-hmm. I actually like the sonic sunglasses. Mm-hmm. They make sense because the kind of stuff that the sonic screwdriver does is normally that, other than opening locks, is giving information. So having it on a heads-up display actually makes perfect mm-hmm. sense. So I was...
Yeah, the problem with the sonic sunglasses is that, it's like, almost the equivalent of Jedi's getting...
Midichlorians. Yeah. I totally, totally agree. I get that. In and of themselves, I don't hate them. But it felt super, super gimmicky. But
if I can just make like a minor point about that, not really a point so much as like an observation that somebody I know outside of this podcast brought up about the sonic sunglasses and Peter Capaldi's costume, which you also brought up, like... Mm-hmm. We saw him in like a sweatshirt and a hoodie and stuff like that, especially, in that first episode and everything like that. And the point that my friend brought up was that it felt like the BBC was trying to make the Doctor's apparel seem very easy to buy at like Kmart or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that anybody could look like the Doctor, anybody could dress up like the Doctor for Halloween or something like that.
Interesting. That's an interesting idea.
It was the first thing.
$400 Tennant suit.
Yeah.
The jacket.
It was actually the first thing that popped into my head when I saw the new Sonic Screwdriver, too, because of he brought that up. I was like, man, that's going to be a real fucking expensive piece of merchandise, that, like, 20-pound-looking Sonic Screwdriver.
It's pretty badass-looking, I have to say.
Yes, it
pretty
is.
Pretty cool. Yeah, pretty cool.
Time for Christmas. I really don't, because that would be one of my best. But look to go back to the Sonic sunglasses for a minute, there is precedent with Tennant and Smith. Tennant had 3D glasses that he would, and Smith had his glasses, spectacles that he'd put on. And keeping that aspect of popping the glasses on, the shades or whatever, and using them to work in a way, almost it could be like a Google Glass, but in concert with the Sonic, as opposed to, I'm going to touch the side of my glasses and blah, blah, blah. And look, hey, I now wear glasses. I am old enough. I am, and by the way, Susan, I think you described me, just now when you said Crocs the old man that people want to spend an hour a week with. I've got no problem with him, wearing the glasses and finding a use for them. But again, it's just some things you don't need to dick with. It would be, it's the same as him Moffat saying, well, guess what? On the next season of Doctor Who, we've repaired the chameleon circuit.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, there's just a couple of staples, and other things will be fluid, and other things will move, and old people like me will, be okay with them eventually. I mean, Missy, Master to Missy. I mean, old man. But I think that there's certain staples that are just such a part of it. The outcry against it was totally, totally deserved.
Completely predictable as well.
Yeah.
As much as I can appreciate it as someone who produces content and tries to try new things, like, I can appreciate that. It was stupid. They had to see it coming. Like, oh no, we'll just get rid of the Sonic Screwdriver, give him some sunglasses. People will love it. Like, really? What are you smoking? No.
It's total clickbait. It was total
clickbait. Yeah.
Not that you would know anything about it, because I read the stuff you write. And I'm thinking more of the stuff Steven writes. So.
Yeah, no, that's much closer. Yeah. If you read my comments, yep, you're spot on.
Exactly. So we have the Christmas special coming up, and next season is a completely blank slate. And there have been rumors, and now those rumors of kind of just one-off specials has basically been debunked. Where do we go from here with Doctor Who? Because it is something, it's brand new from here on out. I'd like to, as kind of the closing comments of this episode, get your ideas or your thoughts or your concerns or whatever of where we're going with Doctor Who next year.
Sonic underpants.
Sonic underpants. What if they're edible? That would be phenomenal.
Just like real life.
Just like real life.
If you eat Sonic underpants, would you fart?
Wow. The fartest.
Doctor Who in a holder. How did he defeat the Daleks? He had a curry. No.
Jeez.
Oh, my.
Well, what are your thoughts? I mean, we have River Song, and we're going to talk about that next week. We're going to do a pre-Christmas and a post-Christmas episode, but there's a lot of unknowns going forward.
Well, I think the beauty of the Christmas special is that it is meant to be a palate cleanser. It's its own. As I said, I think in last week's episode, we do a good one, because last year's Alien Santa knockoff.
Oh, Jesus. That was
good
so
Lord.
Bad.
That was easily the worst Christmas. Yeah. I mean, it would be hard for this year's Christmas special to be worse.
So bad.
It's in the wardrobe. The all-time worst one, in my opinion.
No. Vicious snowman. Snowman with fangs.
I kind of like that, because it touched back to intelligence, and again,
we have not gone back to since.
Yeah, we have. He was in
the Whisper Men. He brought the Whisper Men at Trenzel. Do you even know what show we're talking about, Dali? This isn't Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., isn't it?
Dali saw the Star Trek Beyond trailer today, and he just completely...
Yeah, I lost my shit over the Star Trek Beyond trailer, yeah. That's the only time travel I watch.
No, I mean, it would be lovely if this is, you know, palate cleanser, it's a one-off episode, and then for next season, give us a bit of consistency. Don't bring in cool monsters for a one-off and realize you have no way to develop them. And this, I think, is probably the same thing I say every year. Yeah, I'd like to see more of Gallifrey. I would like to see Gallifrey pulled back. I would like to see Gallifrey not as the wasteland, because they've already, you know, Russell T. Davis took the decision to lock Gallifrey off in the time war so that it wouldn't be a MacGuffin. And then it got de-MacGuffined by Moffat. So now de-MacGuffing it even further, perhaps, to bring it back properly and show the good and the bad of Gallifrey. And let's look at some of the other characters. Let's look at the Corsair before he was eaten up by Michael Sheen.
This does seem like an opportunity to reset the Doctor, we would hope, to really bring back a lot of those classic characters and classic feel. And I mean, like, obviously you have the, you know, you have Missy floating around now, Gallifrey, the Daleks are around. I mean, we touched on Davros a bit. The Cybermen have mostly been absent this season. And you even have an original TARDIS with a classic interior floating around in space and time. I think, you know, I'm kind of getting the vibe that you're putting out, and I agree with you, Marcus. It would be great to revisit a lot of that classic Who in a more modern setting.
Yeah, look, Daleks and Cybermen can take a season off.
Yes, please. Daleks. Thank you. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Daleks especially.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at Missy as being the season bad, as the Missy where, you know, we talked about earlier, where it is dropping the 800-pound weight on the relationship with the Doctor. I mean, how many regenerations does Missy have left?
Which is why, they, if you want to bring back Gallifrey and you want to bring back, you know, have Missy change their relationship, you could do a remake of The Deadly Assassin.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you were going to say a remake of the Paul McGann one with where Missy the master the Doctor's regenerations, and I was terrified for a minute.
Missy turns into a snake and jumps into a guy's throat. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I gotcha.
But I mean, seriously, that could be interesting. You know, we don't know how many regenerations the Doctor has mm-hmm. now. You know, it was alluded to by Rassilon before he was shot off into a little pod off Gallifrey. But I mean, does Missy want in on that? Does she want the unlimited regenerations?
Does she already have something like that? Like, they brought her back from the Time War, so.
Yeah, we don't know the backstory of her regeneration. So, you know, could it be, you know, her going back to Gallifrey just to mess with the Doctor's, you know, regenerations? And we find the, you know, Moffat talked about this 5-year timeline. Maybe what happens if, you know, it's not a question of resetting the clock or giving infinite lives. It's a question of, oh, well, he had infinite, but guess what? Somebody in Gallifrey is going to take it back. Almost like the assassin. The Veilyard. We, you know, that's a character we could see because we've seen the War Doctor. So let's see if we can, you know, perhaps shoe in another regeneration that we didn't see. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say perhaps less of the humdrum on Earth over and over. Mm-hmm. So the soap opera-y stuff.
That yeah, has we really become... got to get away from Earth. 21st century stuff has to mm-hmm. scale back.
Yeah. We're going to have class for that. Remember, that show is coming, I believe, sometime next year.
And that right. was actually always what made this seem so weird to me is, like, even in the Russell T. Davies era, we spent a lot of time on Earth. Like, I want to say it wasn't until, like, season 4 that we actually got a proper alien planet. Like, there was asteroids and space stations and future Earth and the past and stuff like that. But I think, like, it's not until Planet of the Ood that, like, you actually got a proper alien planet on New Doctor Who.
Yeah, but that's just budget stuff.
Right, exactly.
I agree. Go ahead.
If you read a lot of what Russell T. Davis has said about bringing back Who, he wanted to have a more soap opera-y, and I'm not talking American soap opera, I'm talking about the British version, if anybody's seen EastEnders, yeah, I'm sorry about that. soap operas are kitchen sink dramas is the other word for them, where they're grim and depressing and blah, 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 and he wanted to have more of that pullback to the Earth.
Wouldn't it be great, perhaps, if the next companion from the Doctor was an alien? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be great for somebody who wasn't tied to the friggin' planet over and over again, where you get to meet their family? Well, how about, you know, not necessarily an Ood, but, you know, somebody Adric-esque, only not as annoying.
I was going to go with Turlo. Because so in case any listeners aren't familiar with Classic Who, Turlo was trying to get off Earth, and the Black Guardian came to him and said, tell you what, I'll help you get off the planet, you got to kill this guy. So I would really love a resurrection of that plot line. You know, someone is hired by whomever to kill the Doctor, and they worm their way into being his companion, and they're just kind of laying in wait, trying to figure out the best way to kill him.
You know, like, I like both of these ideas, because we get finally away from the idea of, like, I mean, for, you know, they have unique backstories, and they have unique interactions and personalities with the Doctor, sure, but, like, from a, just, like, a background standpoint, from, like, a, just, like, mm-hmm. what is capable of or what is possible with these characters. Every companion since Russell T. Davies has been almost identical.
It's true.
There's not a lot you can play around with. Like, I especially love your, like, the Turlo thing, because the Turlo thing is, like, you don't necessarily have to do that again, but, like, it's a different dynamic between the Doctor and his companion or whatever. It's a different ongoing storyline between those two characters, and not just, like, here's Wide-Eyed Wonder, I need you around because I can give you exposition, and you can, you know, run around really well because you're young. you're 10 years younger than me, or 30 years younger than me. How old did we say Capaldi was? Like, 79, right? Last episode, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they could actually. I mean, wouldn't it be great to see perhaps, you know, tie this into Missy and a Gallifrey Long Con? That's a full season that is somebody who is created by the Time Lords to monitor the Doctor, because there is. Well, I mean, it's like all those people are standing behind the Doctor, and he lowered his spoon and blah blah blah, and there's got to be some politician bastardy type stuff going on Gallifrey to reclaim it, because, yeah, deadly. you go back to, you know, the Key to Time. There's a lot of great, like, episodes of Doctor Who that are more about chicanery and political tensions that haven't been touched on. And, I'm not saying every episode is going to be like, you know, Doctor Who's version of the Senate scenes in The Phantom Menace, but least give us a little bit of, you know, this all powerful race refinding its feet and showing us the good and the bad, and, you know, how the Doctor fits into that, and, you know, the Doctor sent on, you know, a almost like, you know, where they had the Bad Wolf thing, but they couldn't really put Bad Wolf together and finish it off properly because it turned out to be what's-her-name. Totally didn't make any sense at the end of it, and Russell T. Davies still hasn't been forgiven in my books for that. But yeah, I mean, like I said, almost like the Key to Time, where the Doctor has a bunch of stuff that is being done, but he's getting pulled and manipulated left, right, and center, and a nice, juicy payoff, especially if it leads to the end of the Capaldi reign. Something like that would be great, because, I mean, that's what they did with Tom Baker, wasn't it? That's how, you know, he ended his season, you know, his run on the series, and, you know, giving it a bit of gravitas, you know, sacrificing himself or whatever. But yes, less Earth, no kids singing to a star before they're supposed to be sacrificed. No kids from school. No more school teachers. I mean, the beauty of the first set of school teachers was that we only had one kid on the TARDIS, and she was smarter than the school teachers, and she was annoying. Now, school teachers can associate with 21st century kids who, to a child, are responsible.
Sean, what would you like to see? You've been quiet as we've been talking about some of the more classic stuff. I'm curious, where do you think we're going with Doctor Who post Season 9, maybe through this Christmas season episode and forward?
Somewhere new, I hope. I think I'm in agreement with a lot of what's already been discussed. My main stuff is I would love to see somebody who's not from 21st century Earth. Obviously, we're obviously going to get a female companion. I think we've explored some interesting arcs in the past with Amy and Rory, and then, of course, Donna Noble, who, you know, was brought on board specifically to not be the love interest after Rose and Martha. Poor Martha.
No.
But what's that?
You're getting pretty low there, Marcus.
I think he was getting low mentally as well with when Martha was brought up.
You say Martha and I cry inside.
Yeah. But I just want to see something different. We've got 9 years now of the new show under our belt. We've got, you know, some pretty established dynamics that they've done and gone back to. And I hope that they go outside their comfort zone, because I think Clara is a shining example of what happens when you go kind of back to that well, but you also go back to that well with an established doctor, but also, you know, and to defend that a little bit, they needed to do something with, you know, Karen Gillian and Arthur taking off ahead of all the 50th stuff and whatever. And so, you know, here comes Clara half a season in before the anniversary and shoehorned into all this plot stuff and whatever. But I'm excited for it. I think Capaldi's really finally figured out his doctor now. And now there's this added layer of, you know, getting a glimpse of what happens when he goes too far and being selfish and, you know, at the expense of the Time Lords and the universe itself and whatever. But just, it's a big wide universe out there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it's been well established that humanity reaches the stars and spreads out like rabbits across the whole cosmos for pretty much all of time from here on out. So let's explore that a little bit. You know, let's do what the old show did. Let's pull in a companion that's, you know, maybe she can be a school teacher, but from the 26th century, you know what I mean? Or better yet, go back medieval and pull somebody out mm-hmm. before any of this technology, even possibility of this stuff existed, and then see that kind of dynamic. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Give us a new Leela.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's so much possibility here, and I just hope Moffat and crew don't go back to the same old.
Sure.
You know, and there's plenty of plot stuff they can pick up, you know, and in spite of what I think is a sort of bumbled reemergence after all the hype, I think, like Marcus, I think there's so much they can do with the Time Lords now. Mm-hmm. I really, really, really want to explore more of that. I want to explore more of that society and what's been going on with them since they got time locked and everything like that. And of course, I've been a big fan of Missy since the very beginning. So I would love for them to bring her back as long as they don't River Song her. So I want to see them change it up. They have arguably one of the best actors in the role in recent memory. They have a clean sort of palette here. They've got the Time Lords back. They've got, you know, they've got pretty much a blank canvas to do whatever they want with. And I really hope they take advantage of that. So, because I think one of the main things we pretty much say every week, even when the show's not great, is that Capaldi takes everything he's given and elevates it. And that includes scripts and the actors around him and pretty much everything he's involved with. So I really think there's potential here to create, you know, to take Series 9, which was good and much better than the ones that have come before it, at least the recent ones, and really kind of use that momentum to do something really special. So
Susan and Steven, do you guys have anything else to add for what you're maybe looking forward to or what you're hopeful for?
Go ahead.
No, you go. No, you.
I was literally going to say I'm going to let Susan go first because I think I stepped over you earlier. So.
I was just going to say, I think we've already hit all the marks. Like, yes, can we please stop having companions who are from 21st century Earth? Mm-hmm. Let's not have a companion from Earth at all. That would be super. Like, give us a Leela. Give us an Adric. Give us a Nyssa. You know, give something. Just a little. Like, it's going to be a girl, and that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But let's do something different. Let's add some kind of different dynamic.
Give us an android.
No chameleon. Thank you. No.
Steve, you were going to say?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think I definitely agree, especially with Susan and Sean on basically all of that. And well, no, I agree with everybody. Marcus was right too. You're all good. You're all beautiful. I didn't want anyone to feel left out. But I think the thing that I would add on top of that, it's something that I've kind of hinted at more and more ever since, like, Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, but now I'm just going to, like, put it out there in, you know, real thoughts, is that give me more villains. And I don't mean give me more monsters of the week. Don't give me more weeping angels. Don't give me more silence, like these weird ephemeral forces mm-hmm. that are just big goopy monsters in suits and everything like that. I want somebody like the Master, who isn't the Master. Somebody like Rassilon. Like, you know, Rassilon could fill that role to an extent, like, you know, with him roaming out in the galaxy. I talked about that last week, too. You know, somebody who the Doctor can, like, play off of and play against and, like, work against and have chemistry with and stuff like that. Whereas the Doctor, you know, we've seen the Doctor be clever literally every single episode of Doctor Who that's ever been written. Like, it could, because that's, you know, a big, you know, scaly monster, that's all you can do against them is you can foil their plans and you can trick them and you can do all this stuff. But you can't have a conversation with the Weeping Angels. You can't have a conversation with the Daleks, not in the real sense. You can't, like, get motivation from these characters beyond, like, we're bad. I want to see the Doctor be able to play more off of these kind of characters. And we've been lucky enough to get some great recurring heroes and protagonists and stuff like that with, you know, a shielder to an extent this season, but before that we had Madame Vastra and Jenny and Strax. They were fantastic when they were being used. River Song has been fantastic, and we've given her enough of a break that I'm perfectly happy in seeing her come back in this, at the end of here, or in this Christmas special, that is. But I want to see bad guys. I want to see people with real good motivations and dark, twisted logic and all kinds of crazy stuff like that. And I think some of the best episodes of Doctor Who have that stuff. And it's just something that's been in such short supply for like 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's on top of all the other stuff, especially the companion stuff. I would love to see that. It, and more, not because we don't know, I don't think, one way or the other, if next season Capaldi's renewed past next season or anything like that. But I would like to see them do something different again with Capaldi. Like, I've never had any kind of issue with, like, the idea of Capaldi regenerating, or not Capaldi in particular, but the Doctor regenerating into something different or someone different and all these different things. And they have teased us time and again with how they're going to do that. Like, especially in this last episode, they're like, look, Romana, you saw it with Romana 30 years ago, you still didn't believe it. You saw it with the Corsair when, you know, Matt Smith pointed out that the Corsair could, you know, change into all these different forms. You still didn't believe it. So here, you fucking go. We actually had the Doctor shoot somebody on screen to beat it over your head that the Time Lords can regenerate into just about anything humanoid, that, like, you know, or human looking at least. So, like, just get over it already. I don't necessarily need, you know, it doesn't, I don't necessarily need it to be anything in particular, but, like, you know, no, I don't need it necessarily. I've seen David Tennant, I've seen Matt Smith, I've seen Capaldi. You know, I love Capaldi, I love Matt Smith, I love David Tennant, I loved Pertwee, I loved all of those guys. But I'd be happy to see something different that isn't necessarily something that isn't core to what makes Doctor Who fun to watch, like the Chameleon Circuit, like the, you know, the Broken Chameleon Circuit, like the randomized TARDIS destinations, like the Sonic Screwdriver, stuff like that. Like Marcus was saying earlier, is stuff that people keep messing with because it's safe, because it'll piss people off, but the way that it pisses people off is just like, it's not the sort of way that it's going to piss them off where they're like, I'm boycotting Doctor Who or whatever. It's like they're sitting there like, oh, I can't believe this is different than, you know, what it used to be. And mm-hmm. I think they're kind of right, because some of those things are core to what makes Doctor Who fun, but just shake things up, you know, on a more core way. Like, just go, like, stop being like this tease about it. Stop, you know, it's something that is not just a problem with Doctor Who, but it's a problem with, like, TV and media and movies in general and stuff like that. A lot of, like, saying, ha, we get you, like, people, but we're going to express that to you in a whisper, in a way that all the people who would get mad at us won't notice, so that they won't get mad at us. You know, like, I talked about that with the Zygon inversion thing, with the, you know, we're going to have this, you know, big obvious metaphor for a transgender character, but we're not just going to put a transgender character on fucking Doctor Who. Like, just stop it. Just do it. Just get this shit out there. Just, you know, like, take bigger risks with that sort of thing. Anyway.
It won't happen. It will not happen. And this is a conversation that we can have on another episode when the season is down. But as much as you've got with the, you know, the teases and the, you know, Missy to the Master of Mystery, I see the Corsair, you know, the High Command guy who got gotten, you know, turned back into a woman, because the line directly followed it. She was happy to back as a woman. That's as far as it's going to go on Doctor Who. So you got to remember, Doctor Who is still a BBC show. It's still a British institution. And, I mean, I think that I don't have a problem with them putting a transgender character in there. Absolutely, you know, because they've hinted at that with Captain Jack. I mean, you know, he was omnisexual. Mm-hmm. And they've talked about, you know, the Doctor dabbling in the past as well. It's still a kid's show.
Yeah.
It's still a British kid's show, no matter how, you know, old conscious like me feel about it or whatever. And the audience here in the US is a lot... You know, it is a good 10 to 15 years older than the median average, I think, in the UK, you know, that it's aimed at.
Right. I will say, before we get too deep into this conversation about what it is and isn't Doctor Who, we have a whole off season to discuss it, and I'd rather save this conversation for further episodes, because we're all running short on time. We are not time lords here.
The one thing I do want to point in there, like, just because this is important to me, is that, like, I, and Marcus, I'm not, like, you know, putting this against you or anything like that. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth or anything like that. But, like, the idea that a transgender person or a gay person or, like, anything like that is inherently more mature in some way than, like, a straight character, like, that it's, like, inappropriate for children in some way, is a really not good, like... thing. Like, that's a really damaging kind of stereotype, and like a sort of normalized, a thing that gets normalized a lot that I'm kind of not okay with. Just, you know, just not saying that you're like coming in there and saying that stuff, and I don't want mean to make this super heavy or anything like that. I just want to make
you make a valid point, and I certainly look, I don't want to come across like that, but I also know, you know, I know my homeland, and I know a lot of the bullshit that goes on over there, and I know that there is just like, you know, just like the tea party over here.
Yep.
You know, yeah, I'll agree with you up and down.
Let's table it.
Problems.
Let's table this. We'll get into it post New Year, because I think it's a very valid conversation.
Yeah. I just say one last thing, and this goes back to what Susan said about, you know, no problems with it being a girl companion. Can we make it a woman companion? Does it have to be a Perky 20 something?
There you go.
Oh,
yeah,
sure.
Cool. Yeah. We have a, you know, because I'm like, Donna Noble was mid to late 20s, maybe early 30s, and I still think she's the best character because she'd seen enough of life.
Mm-hmm.
Totally overawed. And I would love to see, I mean, look, when Sarah Jane came back.
Yeah.
She was the equal of Doctor right from the get-go.
And I miss Donna. We all miss Donna.
No, we don't. No, yeah, we don't.
Remember earlier on, Sean, I pointed out to you that Susan was incorrect about this thing, so...
Well, sooner or later, everybody has to be wrong about something.
Well, yeah. Speaking
we've
of
all been wrong on this show, don't get me wrong.
Yes, I was wrong about saying we could actually hold this to an hour, because it's well past our time. We unfortunately do have to put a kibosh on this episode. We do have some comments from our loyal listeners. We're going to have to get them in next episode, which... Don't worry, we have plenty to talk about. Next episode, with the Christmas episode coming up, we'll get to all of these comments and more. But right now, we do unfortunately have to close up the TARDIS for the day. Susan, I sincerely want to thank you for joining us this week. It's been awesome having you back, and we're going to have to schedule something again here in the Doctor Who off season.
Any time you would like me to come along, I love talking to you guys about this stuff. It's so much fun.
I'm going to start petitioning for more Susan.
There you go. Yeah,
we talk about it on Twitter like every freaking week that we do this episode.
Definitely. Thank you again, Susan, and we'll keep in touch. And also, Sean, thank you for joining us this week.
What the what?
Just messing with you, Sean.
Going out with the season the way we went in.
No, Sean, thanks for being on. Steven, thanks for being on. Marcus, thanks for being on. Dolly, that's me. I thank myself for being on. You can find Susan at...
Oh gosh, this is me. You can find me at GamesRadar.com, where I talk about Doctor Who, among other things. You can find me on Twitter at Susan Arndt, and you can also find me at TakeThis.org.
Which is wonderful, by the way, Susan. I'm a huge fan of TakeThis.org, and I'm personally amazed at all the events you guys are able to come out to, and the way you guys are helping people. It's fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Definitely, please, all our listeners, please visit TakeThis.org. It is a phenomenal. It's the giving season right now, and at least spread the word about TakeThis.org to.
Can I pimp one thing?
Yes, please.
Since I have the opportunity, sorry to drag this out even longer. We are having a holiday fundraiser on December 28th. The It's Dangerous to Stream Alone fundraiser, and all the money that we collect is going towards scholarships to help people pay for mental health care.
Amazing.
The people on TakeThis.org really is absolutely, as somebody who has serious issues with depression and a dog yipping on my butt.
Yeah, I was going to say, somebody's dog loves this fundraiser. Like,
Marcus, where can we find you?
You can find me at Annoyed Gamer, but forget Annoyed Gamer this week. Go and support TakeThis. They do amazing stuff. They really, really do.
Definitely. Most definitely. Sean?
On Twitter at Sean Norton, SHAUNNORTON. But what Marcus said, go do support to take this stuff because that's amazing.
So. Steven?
You can find me on Twitter and all that stuff on at Steven Strom, STEVENSTROM. I'm on IGN. I'm on Ars Technica. I'm on Dorkly writing about stuff. I haven't written anything about Doctor Who yet for Dorkly, which I should
get on it. Come on,
That's weird. Yeah.
That is weird. I haven't even pitched anything. It hasn't even occurred to me until just this moment.
Do you know anything about Doctor Who?
Yeah, apparently not.
You know, that would probably actually, now that you bring that up, that's a good reason to avoid it. Reason to avoid it, just because, it's not really my area. So.
You can find me at Dolly Domofsky. You can find the podcast at Lonely TARDIS on the Twitters, LonelyTARDIS.com. Please rate and review the show. Again, we've been getting some phenomenal ratings and reviews on places like Stitcher and iTunes, but it always helps. And
thank you.
And yes, most definitely thank you. Thanks for the great comments. And we have not given away all the Christmas cards, holiday cards, so I think people were under the impression that they were going to go by really quick, and people didn't reply fast enough. We have probably about five more, so give us a holler. Let us know that you're interested in the holiday card, and we'll make sure to get this really cool, very exclusive, very limited Doctor Who Lonely TARDIS holiday card out to you. Again, thank you, everybody. Thank you, Susan. It's been a phenomenal show. We'll see you guys next week on The Lonely TARDIS. Sing us out, Stephen and Sean.
Yep.
Or not.
Yeah, no, I mean, we've broken away from the singing, like, the same song every week, so I was trying to think of a different song, but then
That's your homework.
Yeah, that I realized I didn't prepare for this at all this week. So from now on, I promise I will have a different thing
every week. Maybe next week we'll sing TARDIS Christmas or something.
Oh, there you go. Thanks,
everybody. Christmas songs. Shit.
Oh, Steven. God.